Greetings, friends. It's me, Trussell, and you're listening to the DTFH. Thank you for tuning in. Welcome. If you're this is your first time listening and your encounter with my voice is you're kind of like, oh, I don't know. I don't like this voice. Give it a second. Wrapped up in my voice is an actual acoustic healing tone that has been placed there by audio engineers from NASA. It's a healing tone. It is right now healing your chakras, expanding your third eye, and invigorating your brown eye. It is making you whole. But seriously, thank you for listening to this podcast. I've been thinking a lot lately. We talk about it a little bit in this episode with Makad Brooks. I've been thinking a lot about like data diets, you know, like the kind of information that I've been letting myself take in and the sort of progressive disintegration of that information, the weird quality of gaining a kind of tolerance to bad news that reminds me completely of like other chemicals that I've been addicted to. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, sure, great. Maybe you found some horrible story about a toddler finding his dad's gun and killing his dad, or maybe you found some like beautiful article about the impending disintegration of the planet's climate, or maybe you found some kind of like deep dive into the possibility of World War III breaking out because of something happening on the global stage. But that's just not quite enough. It's kind of the same thing that can happen with porn. If you're somebody out there who likes to watch porn, is like, you'll get into a porn spiral. You know what I'm talking about? Like the foot job videos, they're not doing it for you anymore. You know, like now there needs to be like 4 feet, 10 feet, 30 feet. The next thing you know, you're watching an animated porn clip of a centipede giving a foot job to Darth Vader. And then, you know, whoever you happen to be following on Twitter or Instagram, they impact you in some way that you might not even notice. Just little like droplets of their life always flowing into your feed. It's not like they're necessarily bad or anything like that. It's just they're singularly obsessed with maybe some political tribalism or some aspect of the news or an incessant exposure of something that they think people need to hear about that has a kind of insanely dramatic horseman of the apocalypse blowing a horn made out of devil's skulls tone to it, if you know what I mean. A sort of like super emphatic, frightening, freaked out way of saying things on their social media that can gradually start affecting you. And you don't realize it's affecting you until you find yourself suddenly regurgitating it to someone who doesn't watch the news. When you're like, hey, did you hear what happened in New York? And they're like, no, I didn't. And you realize you were about to tell them the most horrific thing that you picked up on whatever fucking news feed you were on. I only bring it up because in this podcast you're about to listen to, Makad Brooks talks about what it's like to have a parasite. And it just got me thinking about all the mimetic parasites that I probably have crawling around inside of me. And they're there not because someone poisoned my well. They're there because I, from time to time, like to take big, deep sips of some of the most horrifying information that you can find out there. And you don't have to go on the fucking dark web for that. You just turn on the news. And there it is. These charismatic data sorcerers just offering you bubbling bowls of mimetic, parasite-ridden information. All kinds of crazy shit in there that's designed to sort of grow inside of you and come flying out of your mouth when you find yourself lacking things to say. Did you hear about that guy who got his dick chopped off by the guy wearing that headband made of dismembered dicks? Like, why would you pass that information on to anybody? I mean, it doesn't really help anyone. I mean, the only reason you should be talking about a guy chopping off dicks wearing a headband of dicks is if you're talking to the cops or if, like, you just encountered that person in your neighborhood. There's no reason to continue to spread that, but it's kind of amazing to hear the story. It's kind of interesting. You want to know more. That's where, like, Dateline or Forensic Files kicks in. I mean, look at Keith Morrison. Does he look okay? He's awesome, by the way. I'd love to have him on the show, but Jesus Christ, that guy, it's like somebody who, like, visits metaphysical radioactive wastelands, like environmental disaster sites, places where the worst fucking thing has happened, and he just soaks in all that energy, and you kind of see it in him. It's like he's almost transparent or something. He's been essentially evaporated. But I have the same reaction to Keith Morrison's voice from Dateline that my kids have to the Cocomelon theme song. Anyway, I'm not going to keep going on and on here. I just want to say thank you for trusting me enough to listen to my beautiful, powerful, deep voice. And hopefully from this podcast, you will not get some kind of mimetic parasite, but a little bit of joy because it is the holidays. I love you guys. We're going to jump into this awesome podcast with Makad Brooks. But first this. I want to thank Amazon Music for supporting this episode of the DTFH. This might seem like a completely obvious thing to say, but there was a time in human history when people didn't have electricity. You wanted to have light in your house, you had to find some kind of flame or wait for the sun to come up or you were screwed. This is why people had chamber pots, you know? They had not just because they didn't have a toilet, because what are you going to do, go wandering in the complete, utter, abysmal, Lovecraftian darkness in your pre-technological home to use the bathroom? You would probably fall. And if you got a cut back then, there was like a 30% chance you would die of an infection. I only mention this during this Amazon commercial because sometimes I feel like somebody who lived before electricity, only in my case, it wasn't electricity. It was whatever insane technology Amazon uses with their Alexa, where I could be standing in the kitchen making grits for my child and say, "Hey, Alexa, play music by John Prine." If you have an Alexa nearby, it's probably playing John Prine right now. Maybe you've been tied up by your dominatrix. And what are you going to do? Ask your dominatrix to go put on a different song? Are you insane? No. You can just push the ball gag out of your mouth and say, "Hey, Alexa, play music by Coil." All this is possible thanks to Amazon Music. And they don't just have all the music you could ever want. They also have more than 10 million free podcast episodes to listen to, like the awesome true crime podcast, Dr. Death, Miracle Man. It's available 2 weeks early on Amazon Music. If you want your music on demand and ad-free, you gotta try Amazon Music Unlimited. It gives you unlimited access to over 75 million songs, as well as podcasts, music videos, and more. With Amazon Music, you can listen to any song, anywhere, offline, with unlimited skips. If you've never tried Amazon Music Unlimited, now's a great time. For a limited time, new customers can try Amazon Music Unlimited free for 3 months, no credit card required. Just go to amazon.com/trussell. That's T-R-U-S-S-E-L-L. That's amazon.com/trussell. To try Amazon Music Unlimited free for 3 months, amazon.com/trussell. Renews automatically, cancel anytime, terms apply. Thank you, Amazon Music. And we're back. Friends, I'm going to be doing live shows in Austin the weekend of January 8th, and I'm going to be in Nashville the weekend after Valentine's Day at Zany's. All the links you need to find those are going to be at DougAtTrussell.com or just Google. I'm sure it'll pop up. And please subscribe to the Patreon over at patreon.com/DTFH. And now, everybody, back on the DTFH is somebody who plays a superhero in the movies, Jax Briggs, in the Mortal Kombat movies, and who you definitely have seen on any of the number of shows that he's appeared on, but who is a superhero in real life. He is a beautiful soul, and anytime I have these conversations with him, it permanently changes me for the better, and this is one of those conversations. So everybody, please welcome back to the DTFH, Makad Brooks. Makad, welcome back to the DTFH. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks for having me, brother. I appreciate it.
It's Thank great, you. Man. It was so fun hanging out with you in Vegas.
It was. We had such a great time.
Yeah. And
yeah, we got to do that more. We do that more often.
Are you kidding? It was so cool hanging out with you and Aubrey and like listening to y'all talk about your many experiences with ayahuasca. And I was wondering, can we just talk about that a little bit? Are you comfortable talking about that?
Absolutely.
Okay, so first of all, how did you meet Aubrey Marcus?
Funny enough, we met in high school because we grew up in the same city. So we met in high school playing basketball against each other. So like we knew of each other, like we knew who I knew who he was, he knew who I was, but we didn't actually become friends until about like 2010.
Okay.
And I met him at a friend of mine. I was shooting a television series in Austin. And a friend of mine, an acquaintance of mine, I should say, took me over to his house. And she's like, okay, let me just preface this by saying, you know, where I'm taking you, this guy's awesome, but he's fucking weird, right? And I was like, I love weird. Let's go. And so we get there, and it's a Christmas party. And he's dressed like some sort of, if I recall correctly, I think he's dressed like the Grinch, and like there's a bunch of other people dressed like reindeer and elves, and like, you know, it was going off. It was crazy. I was like, okay, these are my kind of people. This is kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's cool.
Right.
And so at what point had you already experienced ayahuasca at that point, or was it?
No.
Okay.
May 20th, 2012 was my first journey.
And you remember the date. That says a lot.
Can't forget that, bro. You can't forget that. Like you, it's your birthday. Like you cannot forget the moment in which you passed through that portal. You just can't forget that date.
And did Aubrey introduce you to the shaman and everything, or was this?
No, no. So I had, you know, I had those near-death experiences. I had the coma. I had all these situations that actually happened on May 20th.
Which, by the way, y'all, please go back, listen to the last episode. It's the most incredible story. I think about that story from time to time. Just like I sort of contemplate pieces of the story and like how I don't know how to put how logical it seemed as a sort of metaphysics behind death. You know?
I guess so. I think there's a lot of logic to it all. Like I think that there's a divine orchestration to it all. And, you know, I'm happy that I was able to sort of bring my mind with me in that situation and bring back the story. But if you guys haven't heard that, please listen to it. I should go back and listen to it, frankly. I actually got introduced to ayahuasca because I was trying to heal the remnants of the parasite that was left in my body, because it's an anti-parasitic medication. So a parasite's a tropical disease. So you have to use tropical medicine, you know, indigenous medicine to get rid of indigenous ailments.
Yes.
And I would have had to take years and years and years of pills and treatments to get rid of all the parasites, or just let them flush out of the body, you know, sort of naturally through cleanses. But that would have taken years. And somebody who cared about me deeply was like, yo, man, you got to try this. You got to try this. It gets rid of parasites. It does this. It does this. So he told me all these physiological things. I didn't know that it was spiritual as well. And so it was kind of a Trojan horse for me, in that I was willing to try anything that would, you know, heal my body at that point. And, you know, sort of help me reclaim my wellness.
Right.
Right. And like just... The psychological element of reclaiming your wellness is big. It's you know, it's what we call the placebo effect, but it's really you. It's really you sort of taking control of the fact that your body consciousness is one thing. And so that's what I was doing. And then I saw myself, and I saw, you know, a glimpse of God, and I saw some past lives, and I saw some beings I had incarnated as before, and I was like, whoa, this is not just for the parasite I see.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So it's been a journey. It's been a journey.
Do you think that the parasite that parasites, maybe they function on more than just the physical level too.
Oh, absolutely.
So you're encountering them at different levels. When you shift your consciousness, you sort of experience like the energy body of the parasite or something like that.
Mm. So, I mean, I think you and I briefly discussed this in Vegas, like COVID, we both had COVID.
Yes.
And I had it back in the day when people were actually calling it Wuhan, right? It was January, right. 2020. There was nothing, you know, xenophobic about that. That's just what it was called at the time.
Right.
So, and we didn't know, you couldn't really test for it. And like, but I knew later when people were talking about the symptoms and how sick you got and describing it, I was like, oh, that's what I had.
Right.
And we both agreed that it felt sentient.
Yes. Way.
Like it was like scanning the body and like going like, what do we have here?
Yeah.
Like, you know, it had its own little consciousness and like you were aware of the consciousness and you were aware it's affecting you in a physical plane, but it's also affecting you in an energetic plane and a spiritual plane in some ways. Right.
Yes.
Or maybe everything but spirit. Right. And I certainly believe that these things have consciousness as well. And I think that a parasite's consciousness is just, it's a low vibrational sort of frequency, and you know it can, yeah. You can drink the wrong water, you can eat the wrong food, but I think that it's able to. Where I was in my life, I was vibrating much lower, right? And I think that it had such an effect on me because of that. And then I think ayahuasca, you know, resets that rhythm for you. It allows you to see that you can have a different frequency. It allows you to see that you can have a different rhythm. You can vibrate differently. And I think that it's harder for things that are vibrating on that low frequency to glom onto you in the quantum,
right?
Once you're aware.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it heals you in several different ways, you know, like physically, metaphysically, rhythmically, if that's a thing, right? And I think it also like sort of places you out of the danger zone of certain things, right?
Okay.
Energetically.
Wow. Like a kind of field of protection or something.
I wouldn't even say that. I would say it's more like Donkey Kong, where like there's barrels on certain levels and you're like, I'm above that level.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah, so
like,
sure.
And I see the barrels, but they're like, they're not, I'm not even on the same rhythm as the barrel.
No, right? I gotcha. It's there's this types of seed that are designed to get stuck in the fur of animals, right? And
right.
If you're living a certain way, then metaphysically you're going to get stuck in a lot of shit that you're not going to get stuck in if you have raised your frequency a little bit, you know?
Right.
Like you're not going to get as jealous. You're not going to get as like player hatery. You're not going to like, you know, do that thing. Whenever I'm doing it, I know I'm fucked up. Like you're monitoring other people. And if they're doing great, you're feeling bad. If they're doing bad, you're feeling better. And that's, you're like, oh fuck, I'm like sick right now.
That's not the vibration you want.
No.
It's not the vibration, no.
No, it is not.
Yeah.
Now, this idea of like, do you know where you got the parasite from?
Africa.
But just drinking water?
The best bet that we can come up with is that I was shooting a movie in Morocco. And then, you know, obviously, like we're in Marrakesh, we're, you know, that's a pretty big city. And obviously, you don't drink the water. I never drank the water. But what they don't tell you is you can't brush your teeth with the water. You can't shower. You can't put your face in the shower, like eyes, nose, ears, nothing, right? Also, like if you got a cut in the body, like there's, you know, there's certain parasites that can, like, they'll figure it out. You know, they're billions of years old. They'll figure the shit out. And so, you know, you have to sort of be very careful if you're coming into a country. And I want to say, you know, particularly for me, like, you know, I was in a great place in my life. But I was also vibrating fairly low. Like I was looking at people and going, oh, they're doing better than me.
Yeah.
Fuck that person. Or they're doing worse than me. Hell yeah. You know, I was kind of in that space. I was 27 or whatever the case is. Like, you know, you're an asshole at 27.
Yeah.
And you don't know it. And, you know, I was estranged from my sister who was, I met her one time when she was a baby. I hadn't seen her in, geez, maybe 20 some odd years, but I went and found her like a private investigator in Germany by myself.
What?
Right after that, yeah. And before Facebook, before all that shit. And I was probably 26.
This
and,
is after you shot the movie? After you were in Africa, you went to find your sister?
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm skipping ahead a little bit, but okay. I guess what I'm saying was like, I was searching for so many things in life at that point.
Yeah.
Like my own identity, my family. Just so many things about who I was were unfulfilled. And I was searching. I was in this rhythm and this vibration and this frequency of searching. And, you know, those who are searching are not always lost, but I was lost. Right? Like you both can be true.
Yeah.
And so I was susceptible to certain energetic parasites, you know, including people and relationships and situations, and also actual parasites.
Yeah.
And you know, I did the hippie thing and went up to Aswetta, this place in northern Morocco, which is full of expats. It's beautiful. It's on the coastline. It's got all these Venetian castles. It looks like Othello should be walking around. It's crazy. It's beautiful. If you ever have a chance to go, go.
Wow.
Just don't go to the spa. So I went to the spa.
Yeah.
And we did like a, you know, this whole, you know, like Sultan bath thing. And I was like, yeah, like, I'm a Sultan in my head. Yeah. And it was great. And then, but I got deathly ill like a couple weeks later while I was in Germany. And I was like, what the fuck is this? I thought maybe it was like I had bad schnitzel. And turned out like, you know, it was years of gastrointestinal issues, years of sickness. And I was like, what's going on? And I would go to these Western doctors and, you know, they give me some Vicodin, they give me some this and some stomach stuff. And like, it never really, it never got to the root of the issue, right? Western medicine is always like, oh, what are your symptoms? Let's get rid of those and see how you feel.
Yeah.
And 2.5 years later, I was in the fucking hospital. And most people who have this amoebic antimicrobial parasite, which is a fancy way of saying the worst roommate ever.
Yeah.
they die in 6 months if they don't get treatment.
Because the thing's like basically like taking shits inside your body, right? That's what's happening. It's just...
But worse, because the shits turn into babies, and the baby, like, it's basically building... Its purpose is it's trying to build a colony of parasites inside of you. So it's trying to use you as a subdivision, more or less.
Wow.
And then it gentrifies your body into a way that it is susceptible for it to create more of itself. And then it takes over organ, it moves from organ to organ. And normally within 6 months, it can go from the stomach to the liver, to the kidney, up to the heart. And if it goes in the heart, you're fucked.
You're done. The brain,
you're fucked. You're done. Somehow, after 2.5 years, my shit was just still in the liver. Like, and they were like, that's impossible. There's no fucking way that, you know, like, your liver's fucked. Like, you have a hole in it, you have an abscess, right?
Oh, my God.
But the good news is the liver is the one thing in the body that can heal itself.
Thank God.
Yeah, you know, I'm drinking Japanese whiskey again. It's all good.
Yes. So you're, okay, your liver is healed up since.
It's all good. Yeah, we can go to Vegas. We're good.
This episode of the DTFH has been brought to you by Feels CBD. CBD is incredible. When I was younger, I would have to smuggle this stuff on tour with me because I was using it to help me sleep. It helps you reduce stress, anxiety, pain, and sleeplessness. There's no hangover or addiction. Feels is premium CBD. This means that it doesn't feel like one of the machine elves from the DMT realm is using your mouth as a toilet. It actually tastes good, mystical, magical, like some kind of healing elf tincture from another realm. And it is healing, at least it has been for me. You just put a few drops of Feels under your tongue and you feel the difference within minutes. The thing to remember about CBD is that finding your right dose is very important, and Feels offers a free CBD hotline to help guide your personal experience so that you find your perfect dose. The Feels customer service team is dedicated to making sure you get the best use of your CBD. Joining the Feels monthly membership makes your self-care easy. You'll save money on every order, and you can pause or cancel anytime. Start feeling better with Feels. Become a member today by going to feels.com/family hour, and you'll get 50% off your first order with free shipping. That's feels.com/family hour to become a member and get 50% automatically taken off your first order with free shipping. feels.com/family hour. This is making me think, and I want to get to the ayahuasca part, but this is making me think of something. My wife and I, we started watching, sarcastically watching Fox News, right? So we just sarcastically hate watching.
I've done it. Yeah, I've done it. I get it.
Okay, yeah. So we start doing that. And then we start realizing we're like sarcastically watching this shit every day. And you know what I mean? Like, and then it's like, we're like, are we sarcastically watching this anymore? Like, or are we just now watching fucking Fox News? You know what I mean? And then like, suddenly we started freaking out because we realized like, it's getting in us. Like we're starting to talk. We're starting to kind of agree with some of the shit they're saying. So we stopped watching it. And, right. And since I turned that shit off, my happiness level has increased by like 20% or something like that. So it makes me think of that because I wonder if right now we are at a place where we just aren't advanced enough to recognize that things can be parasitic that don't have a body that you can look at under a microscope, that energy forms can exist, or maybe another way to put it would be that these pools of data, these reservoirs of data, they can be like bad water, and that in within swimming around inside of Fox News is, for lack of a better word, all these mimetic parasitic things that literally are doing the thing you were saying that parasite is doing inside your body, literally encouraging colonization, gentrification, like sort of like, and only just trying to propagate itself with no, I mean, that's kind of the creepiest thing about it's so singular in its motivation. It's, you know, as far as we're, I mean, obviously
it's efficient.
Yes. Yeah. It's efficient. Almost robotic or something like that. And do you ever think about that? Like, you know, if we're just not, we don't understand, some people understand it, but we have yet to realize that many of us are crawling with fucking parasites. It's just they're not organisms. They're ideas, you know?
Yeah, and that's brilliantly put. Like, I mean, like, a parasitic energy is a parasitic energy.
Yeah.
And that, so like, if you look at how our ancestors looked at parasites or pathogens, they looked at them as evil spirits.
Right.
It's shit you couldn't see that was somewhere in the ether, or somewhere in the molecular structure of something that you could intake into the body and it would make you sick and grow in you, and until you succumb to what the efficiency of that bad idea or that evil spirit was.
Right.
So in that, yeah, I mean, it's the delivery in Fox News. It's the fact that they're sort of, you know, to borrow a phrase from Hate Book, I mean, sorry, Facebook, they are playing on that hate algorithm, right?
Yeah.
They're taking your anger and they're expanding upon your anger and using it as soil, right? And so there's something kind of interesting about the fact that, like, yeah, diet is everything that you take in.
Yeah.
It's the music you listen to. It's right. What you watch. It's who you talk to on a regular basis. It's what you're listening to. What podcasts are you consuming?
Right.
What are you consuming? What are you putting into the body, whether it's, you know, a substance or a frequency? And so, yeah, you can listen, I think most of America needs a parasite cleanse.
Yeah.
You know, like if like I used to watch, my television turned into a Donald Trump machine for about 5 years.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And as much as I hated the fact that my television turned into a Donald Trump machine, I could not look away.
Right.
I wanted to see what this motherfucker had to say every day. I was like, yeah. what crazy shit is he going to, sensational, crazy, ridiculous shit is he going to say today? Even if it was offensive or whatever the case was, I was glued. And I found myself sort of going, well, he's making sense on that one. Wait, what?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
I was like, wait, hold on.
Right.
And I think it's repetition, right?
Yeah.
And I think if you keep drinking dirty water, you keep drinking bad water, you keep listening to aggressive, violent music, there's something inside the body that goes, or your body consciousness that goes, well, how do I digest this? You start to figure out how to digest, you know, junk food and cheeseburgers out of the dumpster if you keep eating them.
Right.
Eventually, you're going to find some tasty garbage.
Holy right? shit, you're right.
Yeah. You know?
No, yeah, I just read this thing about how certain, you know, bugs or some kind of microorganism was figuring out how to eat plastic. Like, it's like, so, okay, so yeah, it's like, so you're going to start mutating to adapt to the data stream.
Your diet.
And that is subtle. That shift is very, very subtle, insidious. Mm. You don't even, let's watch Fox News. Let's listen to these fucking fascist assholes go on and on. And then very slowly, you're shifting a little bit. And yeah, wow, that's a really cool, crazy, spooky idea that you're mutating to digest it.
And also, if you look at how human beings interface with each other, right? We are call and response creatures, right? So if someone is speaking to you in an angry way, it stokes the anger in you, and then you're trying to find something that you can call and respond to. And so even if they're saying something ridiculous and that you don't believe it, it's the anger in, you know, blah blah blah's voice.
Right.
I don't want to get any letters here. It's the anger in blah blah blah's voice that makes you go, well, I'm angry.
Yeah.
There's parts of me that are angry and I can connect with that. Even if I disagree with you, there's someone out here expressing anger and I'm happy somebody's expressing anger.
Right.
Or I'm happy somebody's expressing some of the fears that I may have. And there's even the tone of voice or the delivery in how they're doing it, which eventually can indoctrinate you into their ideas.
Right.
And just because they found something, the parasite found something to glom onto.
Whoa.
And like, that's what we got to be careful of. It's like, for me, diet is everything that you consume. So I find myself playing like, so at the end of the year, when Spotify shows you how many, like, you know, what your favorite songs are and so on and so forth. Mine are all, my top 10 are always solfeggio frequencies.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Yeah, like I just play them in the house all day if I'm working or I'm doing something or I'm like, it's playing right now.
Wow.
It's like a low frequency of just peace and serenity. And then if I want to get involved in the craziness of the world, I hop on YouTube or I, you know, turn on the news or, but then I find myself instantaneously within 5 to 10 minutes changing. My mood changes, my pulse rises. Like, it's everything changes. It's a physiological reaction to the anger algorithm that they're using to keep you engaged, and their delivery system is part of that anger algorithm.
Right. Yeah. And it, what do you think do you think there's, other than like just selling phones or prescription medication in between the hypnotic angry wizards spouting their bile into your living room, do you think there's any other motive that, you know, do you think there's something like, I'm gonna say, I know I can talk with you like this, but I feel like it's a way that demonic entities are trying to keep the planet in some kind of, you know, destructive cycle, and that, you know, it's like you see certain parasites, they want you to have diarrhea because they want you to shit all the eggs out, and they don't want you to do it in the fucking toilet. They want it like on the ground. They want it. They want a mess. You know what
they
I mean?
Want a mess.
And so it's like this never ending sort of flow of energy that's making people have these kinds of bouts of explosive, not actual diarrhea,
but energetic diarrhea.
Yeah, energetic diarrhea, because it's you know, it's contagious. You'll get a phone call from someone being like, "Did you hear what blah 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 did or whatever?" And then, you know, and then it continues its existence. Do you ever play around with the idea that is actually what's happening, and that the energy source is the human attention span, that the medium it's existing within is human sentient attention? The moment enough of us turn our attention away from it, it will perish, it will collapse, the world will move on past it, which is why the more we start waking up to this idea, don't watch that shit, this is food too, don't eat bad food, the more extreme it seems to become, the more it seems to double down on itself to become, the world becomes that much more dangerous. So the more we turn away, the more it tries to grab us. And with increasingly terrifying stories of how rotten the planet is and how awful, you know, some group of humans is living on the planet.
Yeah. I mean, you don't even have to go, you know, into the esoteric of it, right? You can really just say, plainly put, I'm sure you've met plenty of people in your life who had parasitic energy.
Yes.
So my wife has a saying, where attention goes, energy flows.
Right.
Right. So the human attention span, the our focused intention and attention is our power.
Right.
If your intention and attention is put onto your inner growth and your spiritual growth and your wellness and your financial and energetic and spiritual aggrandizement, the energy is going to flow there.
Right.
And you're going to see results. If your attention is going to the anger algorithm, that's what's going to grow. So I don't even think it's that complicated or hidden. I think that, listen, you know, we talked about this too last time, I think, but you know, we have pulses of consciousness, and the last pulse of consciousness we had was the printing press. The printing press was a new technology, a new delivery system in the 1500s. And we use old software or old consciousness, and we inputted it into a new delivery system. And then what happened? Whatever that dark force was that was contained in an area geographically and within the minds of a few, it got spread out in that delivery system. And so whatever that was, I think people like you, people like me, people like Aubrey, like several people like that, Joe Rogan, we want our fucking planet back from whatever that was.
Right.
Let's not give it a name. I don't know. It's dark. We know that. It
You're
feeds off of
the East Indian. Is that what they're called?
The Dutch West Indian Company, the Dutch East Indian Company, but not just that, not just the company, the consciousness behind the company, whatever that was.
Okay.
Whatever that was, we have the ability to look at that and go, nah, fam, it's not going to happen for another 500 years. Like we have a second opportunity. Our new printing press is social media. So the printing press was the first time that you were able to take the esoteric knowledge that was kept in these extremely, you know, insular circles, and you know, maybe 20 scribes knew the information, kept the wisdom, and then divvied it out to monarchs and people that it made sense for their own purposes. And then sometimes the peasants got the idea, right? If it helped the political process. And that was the first. So the printing press was the first time you could actually tell a truth or a lie to 5,000 people,
right?
At once. Well, that was the beginning of widespread and industrialized disinformation, right? Fake news started that
yes.
at that point.
Yes.
So now we have an opportunity again to use a new delivery system, a new technology, but this time we have to understand where we are in this inflection point in human history and infiltrate that delivery system with a new set of consciousness, new ideas of connectivity, and not the hate algorithm, but like, and not the parasitic sort of energy, but what's the opposite? The compassion energy, the giving energy, the Gnostic understanding of other people's experiences. Something bad happens in Iran 5 minutes ago, you and I can find out in 30 minutes.
Right.
Okay, wow. What are we going to do with that?
Right.
You know, what are we going to do with that? So to answer your question, yeah, of course these motherfuckers know. They know. And who are they? I don't know. But they know that they can use technology as a delivery system for whatever the consciousness they want to put through it. Right.
Right.
And we've been operating on a very low level of consciousness, a zero sum game, trying to and successfully industrializing commerce and capitalism to a point of where avarice has run amok. I'm a capitalist. I love it. Capitalism has been great to me. It's the intention behind capitalism is the problem.
Right.
It's not the system. It's can I incentivize you financially to be kind? Right now, we reward people for being pieces of shit.
That's right.
We reward people for being narcissists. We reward Americans for engaging in this collective narcissistic personality disorder that I think we have as a country.
Right.
And proven by the fact that we elected somebody who exhibits those traits.
Right.
Several people who will who exhibit those traits.
Yeah.
And I think that it's up to people with, I'm not going to say like, oh, it's up to people with platforms. I'm just saying it's up to all of us to understand the inflection point in which we're in, that never in human history, the last 285,000 fucking years, have we been able to talk to 10,000 people at once or 20,000 people at once. Never.
Right.
It's never happened.
Whoa.
It's never happened. And what do? We try to sell each other fucking self-tanner and shoes and sex toys and fucking hate and all. And we're like, whoa, man, hold on. You got the average person who picks up on a frequency at a certain space time could maybe reach 20,000, 30,000, 40,000 people. And what are you doing? Like you're selling butt plugs? Chill, bro.
Okay. What's wrong with butt plugs? People are selling a lot of other worse things than butt plugs.
I don't know why that was the first thing.
We don't need to come down on the butt plug industry and people are selling assault rifles.
You know what? Fair point. Absolutely a fair point. I was looking at a statue that reminded me of a butt plug right before we talked. So
you were?
It's
a very common shape in nature.
It's a very common shape in nature, you know? If you have a big enough ass, you can make anything a butt plug, I guess. Nice. Hey, nice butt plug. That's a stool. Get the fuck out of here.
Man, I love that we have transitioned from the power of technology and like magnifying various energetic states to, you know, if your ass is big enough, anything's a butt plug, which is true, you know, and that's a very positive way of looking at things.
Like what would the butt plug for Shrek be? Like it would be like a fucking Mini Cooper.
Whatever the fuck Shrek wanted it to be, or the butt plug for King Kong or Godzilla or any of these things. I mean, that would be almost a little more horrifying if the thing, instead of like wrecking buildings, was just trying to put them in its ass. That's a much more horrifying kind of monster. Like, oh my God. It's disgusting. I'd watch that.
What's that say about me? And then I'd watch that. I'd watch that twice.
I would watch that. I would watch that over and over. I would turn that. I would hope that would be like the next Squid Game or something.
Oh, man.
Look, you know, what you told me in the last podcast, it freaked me out. And I think we exchanged some texts about the East Indian Trading Company, because the shit you were telling, that of all the things that I've talked about in the podcast, that has been one of the more chilling things that I've ever heard. I wonder if you could like maybe summarize it for folks who maybe missed the first episode.
Sure. And I've done a lot of research on it since then, brother. So like I know more now. It's pretty crazy. I'm writing a television series that takes place in 1690 in New Amsterdam. It's kind of a Western. And what I've discovered about the origins of this country and how they, and like that kind of started with a text exchange that we had after where you were telling me about, like the similarities in the flag of the Dutch West Indian Company and the American flag. So I started doing some research on that shit and it's crazy. So here's the backstory. So I'm probably going to fuck some of these dates up, but you know, fact check me. I'll do what you got to do, guys. So there was a couple companies called the Dutch West Indian Company, Dutch East Indian Company. They were in Holland, and I think I'm probably gonna butcher this, but I want to say late 1500s, early 1600s is when they opened the doors. They did very well, so well in fact that they were the companies that created the international stock market.
Right,
the stock exchange. Right, so this was the first public. These were the first publicly traded companies. And what were they trading? They were trading spices and sugars and silks and humans, African things is what they were trading. And so the average person who was kidnapped from Africa was about 15 years old, right? And so what you had was a child sex forced labor ring, trafficking ring that people were engaging in for a good decade or a little longer. And then you had a bunch of the privateers, the pirates, the soldiers, the whatever you want to call them, the sailors from these boats, these slaver boats that were jumping ship and committing awful crimes in the streets of Amsterdam, committing suicide, home invasions, yeah. Whatever. Like it was shell shock. They had PTSD, severe PTSD, yeah. centuries before it was labeled. Because of what they were doing in Africa.
Yeah.
They couldn't get around it. And so this obviously did really, you know, this was not good for the company. It was not good for the bottom line, not good for the shareholders. So the company closed its store and got a hold of a printing press, right? And what they did was they gathered groups of academics and doctors and philosophers, and they created a narrative about the prevailing wisdom of race at the time was that Africa was Satan's last stronghold on the planet. And that we weren't kidnapping these people. Well, actually what we're doing is we're removing them from a circumstance in which they are ensured eternal damnation. So now what we're doing is we're taking them from the dark jungles of Africa where Satan can get a grip on them. And the younger, the better, right? Because I mean, like we should save the children.
Right.
But they're too demonic to bring here to Europe, so we've got to put them in the New World. And so, like, let's give them purpose, let's give them Jesus, let's give them all these different things, and something to do with their hands in life, right? Because they're not smart enough to actually, you know, to be a philosopher or a statesman or a lawyer or a barrister. We have, like, you know, they're meant for manual labor, and they're barely human. And these are doctors. These are the academics who are creating the prevailing wisdom at the time in Northwest Europe. And they put out a pamphlet. I always fuck up the name of the pamphlet, but I think in French it's Afrique Diabolique, which is like the diabolical Africans or something like that. And it talks about how they're subhuman and lazy and all of the prejudicial, you know, sort of doctrine that we have now about Black people throughout the world was more or less created in this think tank to try to make, you know, 16th century pirates feel better about what the fuck they were doing and shareholders Holy feel shit. Better about what they're doing, right? So
yeah,
then these became intersubjective myths. And if you were the average Dutch person or the average German or the average English person at the time and you didn't know this, then you were stupid. Or you were some sort of you're a dreamer. Oh, these aren't people. Like, come on.
Right. Yeah,
the same way we know there's no life in outer space, right? We just know there's no.
Right. Oh yeah, I see it. Right. I got you.
I've never met a brilliant African. You've never met an African.
Holy shit!
There was a university in Timbuktu that you guys that kings in Europe would send their children to for centuries. So like this is not, you know, this was a lie, and we know this was the spreading of fake news from a private company who was in jeopardy of losing their stockholders. And so what they did was they created this myth that people started to buy into and spread. And with this myth, they reopened their doors and people didn't feel so bad about investing in a company that was kidnapping people.
Wow.
And taking them to the new world, quote unquote, and, you know, forcing centuries of labor upon them because of these indoctrinated myths. And, you know, it was the beginning of the industrialization of commerce and the industrialization of capitalism. And so it's not only did it, the transatlantic slave trade build the new world, but it also was the building blocks for America. And I'll tell you why. In embryonic America, you know, we're talking about like late 1600s, right? But, you know, long before George Washington was even looking at a cherry tree. It was like, you have all these instances of, you know, the colonialists wanting independence from the crown, right? So what did that even mean? Well, that was government overreach, because the colonies were privately held plantations and cities that the Dutch East Indian Company or the Dutch West Indian Company or the Massachusetts Colony Company or the blah, 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 or the Virginia Company, they created. These were private companies. They were quasi-governmental. Right. They had government contracts. They had armies. But these weren't the king's armies. These were private mercenary armies that were paid by slave trading companies. So the first colonies were all privately held slave trade companies. They were the property of private companies. They were doing so well. The kings came in and go, oh no, I need some of that. I mean, right. I gotta get me some of that, right?
Sure.
Right? So that the king came in and was like, nah, fam, I'm gonna just gangster your shit.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of rebellions, a lot of fights. It wasn't about, oh, no taxation without representation meant you can't take my stocks without giving me something back. That's right. Kind of what it was. It was like,
yeah,
you know, like, hey, I get people go, oh, well, it was about like not having representation in the parliament. Yeah. But it was really about the fact that the king was confiscating your private property.
Yes.
Private property being land, humans, you know, so on and so forth at the time.
Right.
And so what you had was so for instance, Stuyvesant, who was the governor of New York, the first governor and the longest running one, I think, at the time, was an employee of the Dutch West Indian Company. All these names in New York that we have, you go down these streets and these neighborhoods and these areas, and these Dutch names and these English names, particularly from 1690, 1700, 1710, 1720, these are people who were employed by a private slaver company.
Fuck.
And people go to school in those buildings.
Oh, fuck. That's so spooky.
You know what I mean? So the systems of punishment were taken from the colonies, the charters of the colonies. Those charters were written by the Dutch West Indian Company. The system of governance was taken from the Dutch West Indian Company. All the foundation of America was taken from a private company whose business was to kidnap children.
Jesus Christ.
And we built our country on that foundation. In fact, we wouldn't even have a country if the king had not gotten involved and said, yeah, you guys can just have your slaver nation. Wow. Right?
Yeah.
And so one of the final, I don't even want to get into that because it's a 20-minute story, but you can look at like the father of America was truly this private company. And then those employees, generations later, who were kind of quasi-governmental, who were in the private sector, who were also kind of having to, you know, tithe to the king, because they were doing so well financially. They basically were like, nah, we don't want to pay this 30-40% to him anymore. We just want to take our winnings from the slave trade. So we got to basically create our own country. And like, that's really what it was.
Holy shit.
And like, and until we deal with why we founded our own country, we're never going to be able to move forward.
Yeah.
Right? We're just never going to be able to do it. Like you even pointed out to me that the flags are alike. The creeds are alike.
Yeah. No,
the structure of the military is alike. We didn't come from England. We came from the Dutch West Indian Company.
From a corporation. A vampiric, parasitic corporation.
Right.
That was lying. A propagandizing parasite. That's where it came from.
And this will blow your fucking mind. When did the Dutch West Indian Company close its doors?
I don't know. No idea.
The year that America was founded.
Oh, fuck.
It no longer needed to be in existence because it just transferred over.
It mutated. It climbed out of its chrysalis and became a country.
You need money to win a war. Who paid for it?
Wow.
Who paid for it? Where are the receipts?
Fucking pirates.
Well, the rich stockholders who wanted more of their money to be protected from kings in Europe. Yeah. And they were like, okay, well, we have this opportunity now to have a plantation the size of Europe. Wow, let's do this. That's what
Holy
it was,
shit.
Man. That's
and how creepy that now we've got Facebook trying to create another universe. Yeah. You know, trying to expand into some God knows what space that, you know, as technology advances, we will be able to, you know, become increasingly immersed in. And, you know, and again, you know, right now, especially with like the tech companies, who, you know, for better or for worse, you do see an interesting, I mean, obviously the tech companies are not like vile, demonic beings that are most of them are not. Well, I guess some of them are kind of involved in human trafficking. How fucking weird.
I'll put it to you like this. So I'm creating a technology as well. And the one thing I've learned in the last 3 years of working with coders, you know, shoulder to shoulder, is that a code is merely just, it's just the expression of an idea, right?
Yes.
And so whatever indoctrination, whatever traumas or belief systems that the coder is bringing to the conversation and expressing his or her idea that way, well, the code is going to be indoctrinated. The code is going to be sexist. The code is not going to be anti-racist. The code is going to be xenophobic. The code is going to be whatever the person who's writing the code is. So it doesn't mean that social media is evil or this person is this. It just means that we have to have a lot of inclusivity and diversity when it comes to coding, because in 10 years, we're going to be in a place where algorithms are creating algorithms, right? We're going to machine learning is going to, machine learning will be machine learning. And these are going to be the things that run our society. And if those expressions of those ideas are not steeped in human equity consciousness, then we're fucked. Then we're going to spend the next 500 years trying to clean up the space of the multiverse to make it more equitable.
Oh my God. Okay. So here we have you are so fucking smart, man. Here we have way back when. And this kind of like volcanic eruption of the most vile thing of all time. And it looked like a corporation that, by the way, the reason after I talked to you, I was like looking them up and like, then I realized on one of their flags is literally the demiurge and Gnosticism. Literally on the fucking flag is the thing that is considered to be the imprisoning, you know, hypnotic force. They just put it right on their fucking flag. It's like a fish.
They knew exactly what they were doing. It's a serpent head with a fish body and it's a dragon serpent fish thing that is about capturing human souls and feeding off of human energy and souls. Yes, that's what the fuck
that's
was
it.
On their flag.
That was they put it on their fucking flag. And by the way, you know, this is the first rule of vampires is they only go where they're invited. Meaning like, you know, that's a fucking vampire and you let him in. That's the rule. So a corporation that is literally vampiric, like capturing humans, turning their energy into money, has on their flag the mystical symbol of, you know, self-induced, you know, like, you know, vampirism. Like, you know, it's like you look at the tarot card of the devil, and depending on which tarot card you're looking at, the chains that are supposedly holding them are definitely big enough for them to get out of. But they, like, you know, they're imagining that they're stuck when they're not, which is, like, you know, somehow even worse than be, you know, if they were actually chained, then you could think, God, that horrible devil. Or it's like, what does C.S. Lewis say? The gates of hell are locked from the inside, you know? So it's like the ultimate humiliation is like, oh, no.
Wow.
You're not even trapped. You're just pretending to be trapped, you know, while you're sitting at the foot of this awful fucking beast.
We had to take a restroom break. Now back to the conversation.
Hey, brother.
Hey.
So, small correction. Are we recording?
Yes.
Okay. Small correction. I just looked it up. So, the Dutch West Indian Company closed its doors the same year George Washington was inaugurated.
Oh, God. Jesus Christ. The dude wearing kidnap people's fucking teeth as dentures. Which, you know, by the way, if you say that now, people get mad. Now, if you say that out loud, people are like, oh, really? Mr. Woke over here. Oh, yeah. No, the fucking asshole had like human teeth of people he captured in his mouth. But you said something about the code that I want to focus on. Because I think there's like this, we're talking about this, like, once you like get into the waters that you're into and that you're educating a lot of us on, you realize, like, okay, what is it, in the Bible, you will know the Father by the Son, right? And so here we have the Father, I guess you could say, of America being a parasitic, vampiric corporation or conglomeration of corporations that were making most of their money from human trafficking, from kidnapping. That thing mutates, transforms. Now it's just calling itself a country. The flag kind of looks the same. The people who are running the country are either working for the corp or associated with the corp or descending from people who made a shit ton of money. A lot of the wealth in the country is moving down family lines. That's where it started off at, is in that corporation. Now, I think what you were kind of getting at is that now that very same thing is starting to get into the code, into the tech, it's like fractalizing itself down into the very algorithms that are acting as the connective tissue socially. But, you know, that's connecting all of us together within those codes are these very same things that are just echoing from whatever this fucking company was. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that there was, I don't know the inception of that dark idea. Like, I don't know. Like, I have an idea, but I'm going to formulate that idea for probably another few years, and we can talk about it then.
Cool. Okay.
I don't want to speak I don't want to speak during the process of incubation of an idea, but it's undeniable that whatever that was found a way to express itself in the most dynamic way that the human beings have ever interfaced with the printing press. Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, like,
right.
You know, we had the Inquisition, we had all these different things, but that was a religious thing. That was a territorial thing. It wasn't particularly race, right? That was created from a private company. that races were different, that
Right.
being closer to God meant that your skin was lighter. And like that comes from that. And because we haven't questioned that indoctrination to the point of, so for instance, like, here's the problem. Like, we have this whole conversation, this fake conversation in this country about CRT, critical race theory.
Yes. Right?
Problem is, we already have CRT. It's Confederate race theory. And what's happened is the daughters, you probably know this, like the Daughters of the Confederacy, which were actually, it's an organization, but it's also, who started it was the daughters of the Confederate generals and colonels and sergeants and soldiers who wanted to make their fathers and grandfathers look better after the war. So they got enough lobbying power to more or less edit the textbooks in America that made the Civil War look like it was a state's rights issue. Okay, well, what was the state right? Okay,
right.
you can say, yeah, well, you know, I am pro-life. Well, you're for forced pregnancies. There's two ways to ways to express that idea. Okay, cool.
Yeah,
those are, you might be for life, but then why aren't you for the person who's on death row who didn't do it?
Or, you know, you also, another way to put it would be, you support rapists who want to have a lot of kids. You know,
yeah. That's, I mean, there's several ways to skin that.
You support the rights of rapists who want to like keep making more.
You support the rights of incestuous uncles. Good for you. So like, there's several ways to say the same thing, and I think that what happened was, you know, in particularly in this country, I went to a school named Robert E. Lee Elementary.
What?
Yeah, man. I got in trouble. My brother and I got in trouble one day because we were doing this, I'm fucking 10, 11 years old. I know who Robert E. Lee was, but no one really else did. Like, I mean, all the black kids in our school, there's three of us, we knew who he was. We knew he was a spiteful, disgusting, you know, anarchist, treasonous, treacherous motherfucker. That's
right.
Who he was. He was a genocidal and or he either wanted my ancestors dead or enslaved. That's
right.
What he wanted. And there's no argument about that. Not a good man, period. But I had to go to a school named after this motherfucker in Texas who had nothing to do with Robert E. Lee. He's from Virginia. And we had to sing a song talking about, I still remember the song. Robert E. Lee was courageous. He was generous and kind. Robert E. Lee was in spirit and in mind. And it goes on and on and on and on.
Right.
And then my brother and I, we made up our own lyrics and we're making fun of them and we got in trouble.
Really?
Yeah, we got in trouble. And then my mom comes to school and she goes, what'd they do? She goes, well, they refused to sing the song. And then she said, what's the song? And they show her the song and she goes, they are not in trouble. Then you put them back in class right now.
Cool.
And if you guys don't know who Robert E. Lee was, let me get you some books on who he was.
Wow.
Right? You're fucking lucky that, you know, this is all that's going to happen in this situation. Now, think about that. The indoctrination of trying to make a black child sing a song of positivity about a man who would have had him enslaved at 11 years old.
Right.
We don't ask Jewish kids to sing songs about Himmler or Luger or anyone else, right?
Right.
Like, we don't ask that. We don't ask that of German Jewish kids. We don't. We don't ask. You know, Armenian children to sing about the Ottoman Empire. We don't do that.
Right.
We don't ask the indigenous children to on their land to sing about, you know, Andrew Jackson. We don't do that.
Right.
And so the fact that, and that would even make more sense because at least Andrew Jackson was part of the fucking Union, right?
Right.
So it you have to look at the fact that we've already had CRT, Confederate race theory. We've already had these lies that have been indoctrinated into our educational system. So the problem is not the coders. The problem is not, you know, what they're expressing through the current indoctrination of space time. The problem is the fact that America is too fucking cowardly to look at its own shadow work.
Right.
America has shadow work, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that shadow work is inequality. And I think that, like, as soon like if my wife can look can do her shadow work, if I can do my shadow work, if you can do your shadow work, right? I understand that Jung is not one of its own philosophers, but he's got some good points.
Yeah.
And America yeah. should stop being so xenophobic about their own philosophers, right. and who they listen to. And America has the ability to turn this around and look at its shadow work, look at its shadow legacy, and create a light legacy into the future.
Right.
And I think that, you know, that's a fucking awesome opportunity, and the delivery system and the technology is there.
Yes. You know what? What you're talking about is the thing that makes a lot of people stop meditating, because, you know, you're generally lured into some kind of meditative practice by the idea that you're going to, like, you know, I don't know, some kind of focus or peace or, but, some, you know, or it's also the thing that makes me never want to go to fucking therapy. You know, it's like,
right.
because you, it's not, you have to, like, you have to go through the truth of what happened to you.
Yep.
You can't
yep.
skip over, and it sucks.
People
so
hate the
bad.
Truth.
It
People
hurts. It's brutal. And I think when it's particularly when it comes to, what you're talking about, I think it's so daunting. And so, like, like really, really, like, hard to wrap your head around the reality. Like, look, you were taught something that was propaganda, plain and simple. Yeah. And not like, plain you know, not propaganda, like, it's kind of like, you know, whatever, normal, you know, like, you know, bullshit, like, pep club at school, you know, like, yay, let's go Falcons or whatever, but propaganda, like Orwellian sort of propaganda, like
yeah.
we are going yeah. to tell you something that is verifiably fundamentally incorrect, or we're just going to leave shit out. Like when we tell you about, like, one of the, this is from our last conversation, this is another thing you told me that blew my fucking mind, is just how when they're explaining slavery to kids in school, at least especially when I was in school, they kind of, like, somewhere in the conversation, they make it kind of seem weirdly normal. You know what I
right.
mean? Like, they don't use
right.
the term human trafficking. They don't use the
right.
term kidnapping. And God knows they're not saying, and by the way, it's not just like they were making some of these people do, like, forced, like, labor, they were also raping them too. And guess who was one of the people doing that? Well, that was George fucking Washington, the guy that we've been celebrating for so long. That was one of the things that happened over there, and probably happened while he was wearing their teeth. No one's saying that shit. You know
yeah.
what I? You know what I mean? Because
yeah, no, you're right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
No. I'm just. I think it's. I don't mean to laugh, but I just think. I think the way you put it is ironically realistic, right? Like there's an irony to that. Like I'm going to take everything that you have, including your teeth and your dignity.
Yeah.
And you can't do shit about it. And I'm gonna be a hero.
Yeah, and yeah, guess yeah. what? I'm going to be a fucking hero. I'm going to be such an incredible hero. There's going to be all kinds of, like, statues made of me all over the fucking place. And at some point, when people talk about what I actually did, they're going to be looked at as, like, some kind of, like, you know, assholes for even saying it out loud. And, you know, I do think in any human life, the shadow work, you do get a chance to pretend. You do get a chance to, like, make sense of in the worst way possible of the awful shit that happened to you or stuff you regret doing. You do have the ability to trick yourself into thinking, you know what? When he hurt me like that, he didn't yeah. mean to hurt me like that.
He didn't
that.
Mean it like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Because you know? It's easier.
He equated love with anger and violence. So, like, I mean, it really was showing me love, you know. And I mean, like, you want to get deep, because I know you like that kind of shit. So, George Washington, right? GW. The Dutch West Indian Company's name was in Dutch was Geotrieerde Westindische, which is their initials, their abbreviation was GWC.
Are you kidding?
They initially called Washington Caesar, so he was GWC. Now, is it a coincidence?
No.
That the company, is it a coincidence that people who wanted private companies to have their own country elected someone or appointed someone that had the initials of the company? Or is that code to say, like, you can close your doors now. Come on over here.
Dude.
Yeah,
you faded out right there. Hold on one second. You'll come back. This is annoying. Okay, wait, you're back. Hold on.
Oh, so what's the lesson you heard?
You stopped at code. You were talking about, like, you can...
What was it? So when you have these colonies that are privately held or quasi, you know, private sector, and government overreach is happening through the monarchs at the time. And then you have these colonial slavers who are, you know, loyal to themselves and loyal to the private company more than they are to a king, obviously, as we saw because of the revolution. And then you see these people appoint someone who probably isn't qualified for the job, but his initials are GWC,
right.
George Washington, the Caesar, George Washington, you know, CEO, George Washington, Caesar. And the abbreviation for the Dutch West Indian Company was GWC.
Right.
So is that some sort of 17th century or 16th century code? Sorry, 16th century or 17th century code that, you know, you're telling the company, it's okay to close your doors now.
Right.
We got to come on over here. Come play over here.
Yeah. 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 It's a
coincidence. It's not a, I mean, people can believe in coincidences if they like, but the world is full of really, really diabolical sort of orchestrations that prove that coincidences are few and far between.
Yeah. Come on. I mean, and again, it's like that I think is always like the weird, creepy game vampires like to play, mm-hmm. is it's like they like to hang out in that liminal place.
Right in the open.
Yeah.
They love doing the shit right in the open.
Yeah.
GWC.
We told you it was right there in front of you the whole time. It's kind of your fucking fault. Look at the money. Look at the fucking dollar bill. What'd you think we were? Take a look at the money, like swampy green occult symbols all over the fucking thing. New Order of the Ages. Oh no, it's like, what'd you think that was? Did that look like happy paper to you?
Happy paper. Oh man, that's good.
Yeah, but if the shit was like so happy, we would like use it, we would wallpaper those symbols all over the place. Yeah. But it's like, it has a witchy quality to it. You know, it has a quality to it that's got a kind of like sulfuric sort of aura around it that is, but also you know, you've seen it for your whole life. So you're like, oh, I don't know, you know, and similarly, like Robert E. Lee School, George Watt, all these names, you've seen them your whole fucking life, you know? So it's like, they've been in front of you your whole life. So you don't, like if you're like average white dude, you're not thinking about this stuff, you know, you're not contemplating what it really means or anything like that.
Even if you're the average insert race, doesn't even matter, man. Like I didn't think about this shit like until I was old enough to sort of educate myself on the subjects. Like I didn't know there was anything wrong with going to a school named Robert E. Lee when I was 10. I didn't know. Right. Like, I just was like, okay, you know, white people run shit and like they want to put it in our face. I just thought it was fucked up, but I didn't realize how insidious it was, right? Until I got older. And they've since changed the name, you know, thank God.
What's it called now?
Barbara Lee or something like that. I it's against my parole to be within 500 feet. It's a joke.
What? Are you serious?
It's a joke.
Oh.
No, it's a joke.
No, they don't call it Barbara Lee, do they? Like, they left the Lee?
I think so. Yeah, they left the Lee.
Because they had, like, plaques that they didn't want to change? They would save money?
I guess they had stationery. I don't know. We've already ordered the stationery. We got to keep the Lee.
Look, you know, it's either like, we keep the Robert or the fucking Lee. One or the other.
Yeah, which one do you want?
Our budget won't cover completely redoing the signs. That's so fucking weird. Wait, what you mentioned earlier, what is the new technology you're creating? What are you working on?
Yeah, I've been working on something for a while, man. It's been it's pretty spectacular, man. I got, if I could say so myself, it's kind of my life's work, honestly. Idea started when I was working in the Obama campaign in 2008. I left Hollywood for a little bit, and I felt like my civic duty was to change the face of who was in the White House, you know, and you know, give a little, try to add a little hopey changey, you know, to my yeah. life and America at the time. And so I was like 27, and I left Hollywood for a few months and moved to Pennsylvania, and I was a surrogate for the Obama campaign. And if you know anything about Pennsylvania, you know that there's two cities in Pennsylvania. There's Philadelphia and it's Pittsburgh, and everything in between is 1958 Alabama, basically, right?
Yeah, right.
And I spent a lot of time in all three of those places. And I remember I was in a place called Moon Township, Pennsylvania, and I met a guy named Mike at the sunglasses kiosk. He's working at the mall there. And I was trying to get him to register to vote, and you can't. Part of the federal law is that as a surrogate, you can't push a candidate on people. You can just register them to vote.
Okay.
Right? Like, you can give them the pamphlets, you can give them the information on both candidates, but you cannot push a candidate on someone. Mike didn't want to register, so I registered some other people. Came back to Mike, didn't want to register again. I registered some other people. Came back to Mike. I said, "Hey, man, I'm about to leave. It's time. I think it's time. You know, I think you should register to vote."
Yeah.
He looked at me and he goes, "Look me dead in my eye." He goes, "I ain't voting for no nigger."
Holy right? shit.
Right. Yeah. And I go, "Well, and mind you, I had been in 1958 Alabama for a few weeks now, so I'd heard that before."
Jesus.
Yeah, brother. So this is the 20th time I heard that. And so, like, I reacted less and less and less every time. And so by this time, I was like, "Well, why can't you vote for a nigger, Mike?"
Right. Whoa.
And then so I took him to lunch. I took him to Sparrow's, and I don't eat that. So he ate it. And we talked, and I said, "Mike, tell me what's important to you." And he goes, "Oh," he starts going on this long diatribe about foreign policy. And this, and I go, "Mike, you work at a sunglasses kiosk in Moon Township, Pennsylvania. You don't even know where Iran is. Come on.
Yeah.
Talk
right.
to me. Talk to me. Talk to me for real. You can't spell Saddam Hussein."
Right.
"I don't think I could spell Saddam Hussein. So, like, let's really talk. What's important to you, Mike? Like, what's important to your family on a day-to-day basis?" And he didn't really have any answers. So I started kind of going through lists for him. And then I said, "Fuck it." So I tore the cover sheet off of Obama's pamphlet. I tore the cover sheet off McCain's pamphlet, and I put them both in front of him. I said, I gave him a marker. I said, check off what applies to you, what's important to you.
Yeah.
And he did. And lo and behold, he was a 70% match to Barack Obama.
Wow.
Because I know if I see a guy working at a sunglass kiosk in the mall in Moon Township, Pennsylvania, I know he's a Democrat. But he doesn't know he's a Democrat. Right? So
Wait. I got you. Okay, no, I got you. I'm sorry. My yeah. dumb ass was like, sunglasses have to do with no, but I see
it. If you're a low wage earner,
well, yeah, I got you. It's not like you're like mega rich from selling sunglasses at a kiosk.
Even if you own it, like voting, you're likely voting against your interests. And why are you voting against your interests? Tradition, values, you know, what religion and racism, is that important enough to hurt your family?
Right.
Truly, is religion and racism enough to go out and support a candidate who's going to hurt your family?
Right.
And I asked him that question, and he couldn't really answer it. And, you know, so we kept in touch, and on election day, he emailed me, and he said he voted for Obama.
Holy shit, that's cool.
He got his parents to vote for Obama, got his friends and family and wife and, you know, his neighbors, everybody. Like, he got 50 people to vote for him. He said, when it's right there in black and white, you can't really deny it. Right? He had the pamphlets right in front of him, and he did the same thing to these people. And I was like, well, that's got to be scalable, I think. You know, people moving past the indoctrination of our forefathers and looking at a world that they can structure and help co-create in a way that serves them. And I think that people can do that once they get past the idea that their tradition or their patterns are more important than their well-being.
Right.
And that's not only a political endeavor, that's also conscious consumerism. For instance, if I were to, after BLM, I realized I needed to know which corporations supported the world that I wanted to see. And it's not that I want to cancel a corporation. I just want to support the ones that will support me.
Right.
And so I figured out a way with some really brilliant coders to crowdsource kindness and incentivize that through financial gain to the user. So people get paid all the time and they get clicks based on the algorithms that we have now on social media for division and disinformation.
Right.
And hate clicks and, you know, anger mongering and fear mongering. Sure. and all these different things. And these people fucking get paid. They're getting paid.
They sure do.
And I think there's something wrong with that. And so, like, what's the answer to that? And so I can't get into great detail about it now, but I'd love to talk to you about it in a few months. But we, you know, we'll have something clickable and a user experience in about a month, and we're raising money for it in Q1, Q2.
Oh.
But it's going to be a social media platform in which people are drawn there and magnetized there in a fact-driven community that the foundation that holds those people together is their morals, values, and principles, and how they can interface with each other by becoming better allies, better intersectionalists.
Yeah, I don't know.
And kindness mongers, basically. Like, we're devising a system with basically a kindness credit score where you get paid in crypto for your level of engagement and kindness and allyship to other people. Instead of having influencers who are dancing on TikTok making six figures a year by,
yeah,
you can't see, I mean, your viewers can't see, or your listeners can't see what I'm doing, but I'm doing a bad
job.
It
was incredible.
Thank you. But instead of having those influences, there's nothing wrong with those influences, but I don't think that they're adding to where we're going. I think that I would much rather have the young lady who worked at Starbucks, who was really energized by the power and the rhythm and the vibration and the frequency of 2020, but doesn't know how to organize now. There's no tools for that.
Right.
And there's no solutions for that. And maybe she can leave her job and she can make six figures by being kind to people and by caring and by being a professional philanthropist, something that we're going to call a social impactor, not a social influencer. And, you know, we're just structuring a community around that. Why don't you have a kindness credit score? Why isn't kindness something that we can measure financially? If you're putting good out into the world, why does that just have to feel good? Why can't you make money off of it? And I think that, you know, I hope, my hope and my intention is that this is how we move very old problems into a new delivery system with new solutions.
That is cool, you know, because it's like, yeah, there's a common notion in the world is nobody wants good news. Like, you're not selling ad space with good, yeah, news. Like, and that's not what grabs the human attention.
No.
It's that it's the fear porn that we're into. It's the and so what you're saying is like that you think that there is a way to
I know.
Really?
I know this way. Because our monetization model is not selling ads. We are going to be the first app that actually, what Facebook does now is they take your information, they take your data, they create nodes out of your data. Anytime that you click on anything, it becomes a node. Like, let's say a node is a blossoming point in which all these directions can be ascertained and how you move on the internet, how you move in cyberspace, right?
Yeah.
And so instantaneously, whenever you are on Facebook for 1 minute and you click on shit, they are instantaneously turning your data, you're the product, they're turning your data into money for them.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
We're going to bank your data for you and give it back to you in crypto.
Wow. That's cool.
So the longer you stay on our app, you'll make money.
Wow.
The more engagement you have in kindness, you'll make money.
Kindness being, yeah, measured by like what websites you're hanging out on or what output you're
no
putting.
so great.
By the
example.
Way, if I'm asking too many questions, because it's
that's fine. It's fine.
Okay.
When is this podcast coming out?
This podcast will come out next week if that works for you.
Okay. I will not talk about exactly what the kindness metric is, but it's a reasonable standard of engagement in which someone can actually quit their job and be a kindness influencer or a social impactor or whatever you want to call it, a professional ally, And you can do it from home, or you can do it from your phone. I can't give you the secret sauce yet, but I'm happy to talk to you about it when it's too late to not you, but when it's too late for someone else to hate or too late to steal. So
I gotcha.
Yep. But thank you. But trust me, brother. It's been percolating in my mind since 2008, and it's been in the forefront of my consciousness and with coders for the last 3 years. I think we figured out something that's really fucking cool.
You're really fucking cool.
You're really fucking cool, bro.
No, every time, man, every time we talk, it's like a transformative experience for me. So thank you so much for coming on the show, Makata. It's so cool.
Man. Thanks for having me, man. Yeah, I appreciate it.
And I can't wait till until we get to hang out in person again. That was such a crazy night.
Yeah, it was a great night. Listen, I learned a lot, man. And you're such an interesting conversationalist and such an incredible human being. And you know some of the coolest people on the planet. Like, you know, like I really enjoyed, what was the guy's name who had to leave early? The animation wizard.
Pendleton. Oh, God.
He's an interesting cat, man. And like, it's always a very fun and intriguing and enriching experience, you know, seeing you in person and also talking to you, man. So I appreciate it.
Makata, thank you so much. Will you please tell people where they can find you?
If they figure it out, they can let me know. I don't know.
On this plane.
Yeah, you can find me on social media, like you know, on the New Printing Press, MEHCADBROOKS, Makata Brooks. I try to put out a lot of positive and you know, messages about human equity consciousness and self love and stuff like that. That's just kind of where I'm at in my life right now. But also, you'll catch me in the movie still. I'm still doing my day job.
You working on a show right now?
I'm developing and producing, and then I'm doing the acting that speaks to me.
Cool.
You know, luckily I'm in a position where I can do that, and I feel very blessed about that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm one of the lucky few.
Makata Brooks, everybody. Thank you.
Duncan Trussell,
so
everybody. No, fuck it. Give that up for Duncan Trussell.
Get out of here. Thank you. Please. Yes, thank you. Don't forget to go to platinumbuttplugs.com. He's working on something to generate cryptocurrency for being a good person. I'm making money off of Platinum Butt Plugs. They will cleanse your auric energy field and make you come super hard. Makata, thank you so much.
Awesome. You got to send me a couple.
Of course. Are you kidding?
All right.
They're in the mail. That was Makata Brooks, everybody. All the links you need to find Makata will be at DuggarTrussell.com. And thanks to our sponsors, Feels and Amazon Music, for supporting the show. But most importantly, thank you for continuing to listen. Have a great weekend, and hopefully you will not get your dick or genitals chopped off by this guy who's been going around a lot of the big cities chopping off people's dicks and genitals and wearing them on a headband. I'll see you next week. Until then, Hare Krishna.